Good morning, everyone. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are Third Space. Good morning and welcome, and thank you for being here with us, whether you're listening in your own home on a computer, or maybe you're walking your dog with a podcast on, or listening in another time in history. We're in September 2022 as we record this, and actually I have just become an auntie for the fifth time. The day before yesterday, a little girl called Penelope was born in our family, and we have a tiny little weeny little situation, and so I'm feeling very grateful and amazed at how small humans are when they come out, and that's filling our realms with joy. And equally, we have some family illness that's also really hard at the moment, so I feel very multitudinous, as I do often, but in a very kind of human bodily way, with people that are precious, either being born or maybe on their way out. So again, in the ever changing circumstances of our lives, Justin, of birth and death and illness and loveliness and all kinds of things, this is like this extraordinary anchor in the middle of it that tells me where the ground is and helps to, you know, I was just reading this lovely source that you've picked, Justin, just before we came on, and thinking, thank goodness we are seeking to find these grounding, orienting pieces of creativity and wisdom that allow us to be in these conversations with one another. So I'm very grateful to be here this morning, as I always am.
I am very grateful to be here too. I've got a horrible cold, as you know, Lizzie, so I might cough and splutter, and I want to apologise in advance to everyone who's listening if I don't manage to keep it under control. I'm really moved by your news, Lizzie, which I didn't know, but knowing your family enough to know what the situation must be, and but also just noticing this morning my feeling joy at the way that life keeps on bursting through. You know, somewhere, and I don't just mean human life, I just mean being reminded that somewhere always there's life bursting through, because life does that.
Yeah.
And it feels like a very beautiful reminder of that this morning, actually. I have that right close here. So, what a blessing.
Thank you.
So, as always, we have a source to begin this morning's conversation. And for any of the many of you who are with us, if you didn't find this out yet, you can always find the source in the notes to the podcast. If you with the YouTube videos on our lovely turningtowards.life website, where, by the way, you can also sign up to get the source and a link to the videos and the audio each week by email, which lots of people really love. And you can also find it in our Facebook group, where we go live every Sunday. And we have been doing this for a long time, Lizzie, and this morning particularly, as I was feeling the muchness of everything that is in the world, and also feeling what it was like to wake up and have a cold, and thinking it would be much, much easier with the muchness of the world and with this cold I've got, I could just hide under my duvet and I could disappear. How powerful it is to have practice, and how powerful it is to have practice with others. So I'm more and more, as I go through my life, I feel like an advocate for myself and for all of us to find ways to have practice that involve one another, and that we do simply because we do it. Not because it feels right today, but simply because we do it. And I know that doing this, which I could have skipped if this wasn't the kind of practice that it was, brings enormous gifts just by doing the practice and being in it with you, and then the hundreds of other people who are in this in some way with us. So I'm very glad for the simple gifts of practice this morning.
Justin, I am, just as you're saying that, I'm thinking how this practice for me feels like one of the things that isn't something that's of the order that could be cancelled. You know, it's like if you think about all of the times we've done this in whatever circumstances we've been in, you know, being unwell, having just had a baby, being in a kerfuffle of some kind in our lives, like whatever it is.
Yeah.
It never occurs to me that it should be cancelled, but that whatever's going on, it's going to be really helpful. So that's what we're going to do, kind of thing. It's never not helpful if we're ill and or if we're in something difficult or whatever's going on. It's the thing that really shouldn't be cancelled, and I never want to either. You know what I mean? It's quite curious, which is different to lots of other things, which have a different quality to them.
And that is exactly what I mean about practice, because if I look inside me, I can find parts. There are always parts of me that go, oh, it would be easier too. But as a whole, I've never wanted to not do this. So even when in other circumstances, I could quite easily be led to go, oh,
yeah,
with this. And so it's really something to have. What I realize this is also, Lizzie, and maybe we can talk about this some other time. It's a life-defining commitment. So my life is one in which, regardless of what else is going on and regardless of what other commitments I'm in, unless there is a life-threatening emergency or something, my life is shaped by a commitment to be in this conversation every week on a Sunday at 9 a.m. UK time. So that's life defining. Everything else moves around it.
Yeah.
And I think having practices and commitments like that, vows like that in our lives that are there for their own sake, really make a huge difference. They're incredibly life-giving, as this is.
Yeah.
And that I don't do it on my own. I'm not doing like a solo practice here.
Mm.
We're doing it together. It relies on us and others. So to anyone who's with us, if you want to sign up for the email where the source just arrives during the week in your inbox, you can go to turningtowards.life. And here is this week's source, which is by Rebecca Solnit. And I was sure that we must have talked about this before, Lizzie, but I did the thing that everyone can do, which is I went to our website and I typed in things into the search box. And no matter which way I searched, I could find that this wasn't there, although many, many, many other related things were there.
Yeah.
So I felt confident in bringing this, which is from Rebecca Solnit's book, Hope in the Dark. And it's called Hope is Not Prediction. F. Scott Fitzgerald famously said, "The test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposed ideas in the mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. But the summations of the state of the world often assume that it must be all one way or the other. And since it is not all good, it must all suck royally." Fitzgerald's forgotten next sentence is, "One should, for example, be able to see that things are hopeless and yet be determined to make them otherwise." You wonder what made Václav Havel hopeful in 1985 or 1986, when Czechoslovakia was still a Soviet satellite and he was still a jailbird playwright. He said then, "The kind of hope I often think about, especially in situations that are particularly hopeless, such as prison, I understand above all as a state of mind, not a state of the world. Either we have hope within us or we don't. It is a dimension of the soul. It is not essentially dependent upon some particular observation of the world or estimate of the situation. Hope is not prediction. It is an orientation of the spirit, an orientation of the heart. It transcends the world that is immediately experienced and is anchored somewhere beyond its horizons. Hope in this deep and powerful sense is not the same as joy that things are going well, or willingness to invest in enterprises that are obviously headed for early success, but rather an ability to work for something because it is good, not just because it stands a chance to succeed. The despair that keeps coming up is a temporary inability to work for these things that are good, a loss of belief that the task is meaningful. That loss comes from many quarters, from exhaustion, from a sadness born out of empathy, but also from expectations and analyses that are themselves problems.
Thanks, Justin. F. Scott Fitzgerald famously said, "The test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposed ideas in the mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. But the summations of the state of the world often assume that it must be all one way or the other. And since it is not all good, it must all suck royally." Fitzgerald's forgotten next sentence is, "One should, for example, be able to see that things are hopeless and yet be determined to make them otherwise." You wonder what made Vaclav Havel hopeful in 1985 or 1986 when Czechoslovakia was still a Soviet satellite and he was still a jailbird playwright. He then said, "The kind of hope I often think about, especially in situations that are particularly hopeless, such as prison, I understand above all as a state of mind, not a state of the world. The kind of hope I often think about, I understand above all as a state of mind, not a state of the world. Either we have hope within us or we don't. It's a dimension of the soul. It's not essentially dependent on some particular observation of the world or estimate of the situation. Hope is not prediction. It's an orientation of the spirit, an orientation of the heart. It transcends the world that is immediately experienced and is anchored somewhere beyond its horizons. Hope in this deep and powerful sense is not the same as joy that things are going well or willingness to invest in enterprises that are obviously headed for early success, but rather an ability to work for something because it's good, not just because it stands a chance to succeed. The despair that keeps coming up is a temporary inability to work for these things that are good, a loss of belief that the task is meaningful. But loss comes from many quarters, from exhaustion, from a sadness born out of empathy, but also from expectations and analyses that are themselves problems."
I've been thinking a lot, Lizzie, in the last 2 weeks about something that we talk about very much in our work, particularly when we're teaching our professional coaching course, and that we were talking about this last weekend. That there are big stories in the world, narratives, meta-narratives of the world that we all swim in, that we don't often know that we're swimming in, and that can bring great suffering. And one of them has been the story that the point of life is to have everything work out. And you'll know this, that we talk about it as the island where it all works out, like some idea that if I get famous enough or rich enough or safe enough, or it could be anything, then I'll be freed of difficulty. And I can feel that in this writing here, which is the all or nothingness of it that we get into, which is either I'm heading towards a goal that I know is going to come about. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about the way any of us who've been in any kind of corporate setting or something probably got taught that you should have SMART goals, which are specific and measurable and action oriented and don't know what the R is, and time bound. But most of life isn't at all like that. And one of the big dangers is that the moment we feel confused or we don't know how this is going, or we can feel all the things that are in the way, it's really easy to conclude that this whole project is pointless, and we get thrown out of it. So either we're in or out. It's all or nothing. It's exactly the opposite of what F. Scott Fitzgerald said, and it also leaves us really vulnerable. It leaves us vulnerable to people who will promise that they'll take us to the island. So politicians who've got some kind of I know the answer and just follow me and I will save all of us. So it leaves us really vulnerable to that. And it also really leaves us vulnerable to despair. And then right now we're also in the midst of all the things that are going on. We're in this story that the whole world is falling apart and that there's nothing really that anyone can do about it. That's the big world is on fire story. And I think that just leads to the same places. And what I always find myself really touched about in how Vaclav Havel writes in the middle of this is this the dignity and depth and love of reminding ourselves that we are ones who can hold many, many things at the same time, but also that we can make our lives deeply, deeply, deeply meaningful by acting on what is meaningful, even though we don't know how it's going to turn out. We don't have to know how something ends in order to commit ourselves to walk a path together. And it feels so important to say, because I mean, it's a little bit like on the tiny, what we're doing is on a tiny scale, but nevertheless it's exactly the same thing, which is making the commitment to show up for something, because you matter and the conversation matters and this practice matters and I matter enough to show up, even though who knows what will happen from it. Now that's tiny, and Vaclav Havel is talking about the freedom of entire country, and we might be talking about organizing things to take care of the world, or we might be talking about redressing the millions of deep, deep, deep injustices that are calling for our attention. But maybe that's the thing, that maybe the faithfulness that there is inside us, which is one deep, deep aspect of being a human. Maybe what this points to is a way that we're really called to cultivate our own faithfulness in a world that will keep on telling us that if there isn't a result now, or a result we can be sure of, we might as well not bother and watch TV or something.
Oh gosh, it feels really big, this whole thing, to me. And the piece that I'm feeling into, Justin, as you're talking, is, I think, pointing to the part of Rebecca Solnit's pieces that she's taken, and this is a piece of Vaclav Havel's words, that it is not, where does he say it? Oh yeah, it transcends the world that is immediately experienced and is anchored somewhere beyond its horizons. Somehow, that to me is like completely golden as an invitation and an acknowledgement. Because I feel like so much of the world today is so anchored in immediate experience that I really need that sentence. You know, I really need that validation of the world in me that is beyond my immediate experience and comes from this place called the soul, or a different, yeah, it's a dimension of the soul that's not dependent on a particular observation or an estimate of the situation, a worldly estimate of the situation, something other than that. So I feel like, you know, this is some kind of dance between the really earthy worldliness of things, but that there's also other dimensions of us as human beings that really matter here. And so if I live in my immediate experience, it would be so easy for me to feel hopeless and then let that be the end of my road, if you like. And as you say, go and watch telly and whatever, you know, we're all done for. So I'm just going to while my life away or something. But it feels so true that there's another dimension here. Like I can feel that really easily in my body, but I can feel a huge big and there, which is, and humanness is extraordinary. And I can't help but believe in goodness. I can't help but believe that this kind of hope that's not a prediction, but an orientation, is a naturally arising something in my humanness that needs to feel welcome here as well. And sometimes I think it gets kind of labeled as being naive or something, or you just don't get it. I feel like I do get it. And it really hurts when I get it in my immediate experience. Like I can feel the devastation and the horror and difficulty and the intractableness of problems that currently exist in the world. But I can't stop there for too long before something arises, like someone smiles or I see somebody being really kind to someone else, or I notice my own wish to make a difference in a very simple way. And I can't deny that. Like, I can't, and it's not calculated or planned or something, but there's more than just estimating the situation, thinking there's no point. It feels like that's not all that's here. So I feel really glad of this, and also really hopeful, because Vaclav Havel being in prison and saying this and feeling like he hasn't even done anything wrong, he's just been a playwright. You know, the fact that something, how brilliant that he was able to access the part of him that was the soulful part, that was also an immediate experience of being trapped and his freedom taken away and goodness knows what happening in the prison at that time and that place. And so then it kind of, it feels resonant with our souls current day and in this particular life, that if that's possible there, it's really possible here. You know, we are, the sun is shining on us and I can walk out of my front door and have the sun on my face. And it feels so important to be acknowledged and acknowledging of that of us, which is this kind of, this particular important kind of hope.
I'm really feel something, an opening in me, Lizzie, that you're drawing us, our attention to this sentence in the middle about something that transcends the world that's immediately experienced. So it feels that way to me too. And what I noticed about it whilst you were talking is, I think maybe over the last couple of hundred years particularly, and maybe particularly in some parts of the world rather than others, and in some communities rather than others, but in the sort of the culture that's become the one that sort of dominated in globalization, we've taken up a kind of rationalism in our thinking, which says there is nothing other than what you can immediately see and measure. Mm-hmm. Well, there's physics, right? So of course there's the sort of the transcendent world of physics that only some certain people have access to, with hadron colliders and, you know, all of those kind of things.
Mm.
But otherwise, if it's not measurable, it's not true. If you can't count it, it's not true.
Mm.
And I think it goes with all of the other big stories in our culture that keep us paralyzed and diminished, and also, frankly, really, really serve us losing our own dignity and our own sense of agency, and ending up fueling systems of entrenched power that keep going the way that they are, that leave us immobile in the midst of them, because there's such a strong story that there's nothing transcendent, nothing in us, nothing of the world that is transcendent. We got rid of that kind of superstition long ago.
That's
what we say. But I think for many of us, if we get quiet for a little while, or we just stare into the eyes of a loved one or a friend, or we see a baby, or we go and stand in the woods and get close to a big tree, or we see the sunrise, or we hear of people up to things that really matter that seem to have no firm chance of success, or we come across people taking care of one another, or we feel into the strength of our own feelings, or we feel what it's like to have a body, or I mean, I could go on. We don't have to pay that much attention to see that story, that there is only what can be measured, it's the only thing that is real, is simply not true.
Yeah.
And that's the story that would also tell us that love is just an evolutionary accident, and that art is too, and that imagination is there for survival of the fittest, and you know, all these things that keep on reducing everything to something like about who wins out over who, or who gets what, or how we make a thing, rather than it being an inherent and extraordinary and sacred aspect of being, of living, that all of this, the what's here, the sort of practical what's here is here, and the transcendent orientation of the heart that isn't just our hearts, that is everything around us, is also here. And it's no wonder when we can't find it that we fall into that that sense that it must all suck royally, because I can't find the measurable evidence that everything is good.
Yeah.
And in a way, what I could feel as you were talking about the transcendent is that it also allows us to really hold and honor our complexity. Like, there are, and we've talked about this so many times, there are parts of me that do despair, and then there are parts of me that see the sunrise and go, oh my. And then there's something of me that is neither of those, that is really deeply tuned into the something that is both here and beyond the horizons.
Yeah.
And I wish we would learn that. And I suppose that's why we're having this conversation. So that when we're in difficulty, and there is so much difficulty, instead of trying to clamber on top of one another, because we can't imagine anything other than anything else, we turn towards one another and are prepared to say to one another, you're really different to me, and you're the same as me, and I believe in you, and I believe in me, and I believe in us, and who knows how this is going to work out, but let's take care of one another and keep one another warm and bring one another food and look into one another's eyes, and, you know, all the things that we would do, we do very, very naturally when we remember that we are, whatever word you want to use for it, whether you want to call it heart or spirit or transcendence or being, or God, you can have all kinds of words for the same thing. It's really, really matters.
Oh, so much arising, Justin. I feel this renewed kind of commitment to the unseen somehow. You know, there's a really lovely prayer, I don't know where it's from, that talks of thanking the spirits seen and unseen, heard and unheard, acknowledging that there's way more here than what we can see, and that those forces are helpful and we can't know them in this direct experience, but it's really important to acknowledge that. I feel really committed to that. And also notice the times when I really am at the end of my possibility of action and doing things and I can't change something. Then I will go there. You know, then I will start praying and invoking support that's unseen, because I can't, you know, it's like the moment that I have to hand something to something bigger than myself. But I feel like I feel like a renewed dedication to doing that when it's not needed, but when it's gentle times. That feels really, really important. And what I'm also noticing arising, Justin, is how many years, and still it's a work in progress, it's taking me to shake off my cynicism about that. And I really feel, interestingly, someone said to me once, the things you're most cynical about are most likely to be the things you care most about. And I remember being like, what? Huh? You've been really confused for a long time. And then examining all the things I'm cynical about, and things like, yeah, whatever, that can't be real, that's ridiculous, or hocus pocus, or whatever, you know. And I feel like, as I've studied it, I've gone, oh yes, I do really care about that really profoundly. And it's not that my cynicism isn't still here and still gets activated in certain ways, but I can now see it for what it is rather than believe it. I can see that cynicism is not going to help me deepen or widen my horizons and my understanding and my sense of compassion and possibility in the world. So I feel like, I don't know, somehow cynicism stands against possibility, and I really feel committed to possibility. And so I've had to look at that. And I feel like it's a really big thing because it has taken and is taking so long for me to calm that part of me and just to say yes. And there's way more than my cynicism in any situation. Like if I stopped in my cynicism, my world would be tiny. It would be really tiny. And that's not what I want for myself. And so with this kind of recommitment to the unseen and the soul and the kind of hope, this orientation to the world that Vaclav Havel is talking about, as I recommit to that, I feel like, again, I have to encounter my cynicism about it. And thankfully, I have a gentle way of that not taking up too much time or too much space. And that I can actually then see what on earth that means. Like, what is that? My goodness, there's a being in each of us. And as you say, like this little baby being born, she's pure being. I mean, she's literally, she weighs 2.6 kilos and she just barely opens her eyes and has some milk. You know, she's pure being. There's no, you know, there's none of our grown up human madness going on yet. And so it's an incredible encounter with beingness that is us. Like it's not us. We've just forgotten that so much. And it's not in our awareness, but it can be. You know, I feel really committed to like my baby Penelope-ness is right here. It's not gone anywhere. I didn't like unbecome from being a baby. My essential self is what it was then now. And so, yeah, I can just feel this gift of recommitting to that of me that is this spirit, essence, like you said, transcendence, God, love, beingness. And in doing that, I feel much more able to then be in contact with yours or someone else's as well.
I'm left as we feel so much to say. And I was looking at the time and I was thinking, yeah, this is probably a 3 or 4 hour conversation, but we have a commitment about the length of these. But I just wanted to say by way of closing to draw on what you just said, Lizzie, that remembering the something deeply mysterious and transcendent that we so obviously are when we begin, you just have to look at a baby that we lose touch with. And feeling so glad for being in a conversation about hope as an orientation of the spirit and the heart, and also being reminded that our cynicism is what we do to protect our brokenheartedness. Yeah. And I'm always reminded by being in conversation with you of the possibilities that come when we pay attention to ourselves and one another, that we're not fixed.
Mm.
We don't just have to go, I am this way. We can awaken something in us that is deeply life-giving,
yeah,
and life-giving to one another, which is what I feel like we've been doing this morning in this conversation.
Mm. Yeah.
So I'm endlessly grateful to you, Lizzie, for being in our being in this together for so long. In a couple of weeks, it'll be 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And for everyone who's with us, whether you joined us 5 years ago or whether somehow you stumbled across or were introduced to this recently, we know how many of you there are, and you're so welcome to tell other people about this too. We know that people benefit from being alongside this conversation. And just a reminder that you can reach us if you're with us. You can email us. You could go Justin or Lizzie or hello at turningtowards.life, and you can reach us in our Facebook group. And we would love to hear from you. And all being well, we will be back this time next week for another conversation.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thank you.